Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Suderstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, bringing you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Wednesday, October 23rd, 2013. Lots of things to be talking about today. A little bit of a pullback in gold, but not bad after the great somewhat of an uptick that we've seen. But we're going to talk about Saudi Arabia. Are they ready to sever their ties with us? And, of course, we're going to talk about the IMF. We're going to talk about the all kinds of things we're going to talk about that deals with you and your money. So make sure you stay tuned. First, let's get to the market reports. We had gold today down just slightly, 670 at 1335. Silver was down 11 cents today, 22.70. Platinum was down 12 at 14.41. And palladium was down 9 at 748. And, of course, they were all off their highs of the day. So they're kind of ending up middle of the road today. The USDX today, 79.25. And we have crude oil down almost a buck and a half at 96.91. Hard to believe crude oil taking the tumble that it has taken. I mean, it's dropped almost 10 bucks in just a short period of time. So very interesting, very interesting. And so let's go ahead and see what the paper markets did today. Dow was down triple digits today, but they pulled it back only to have it down about 54 points at 15,413. The S&P ended its four-day streak of record closes. So that was down 8 points today at 17,1746. The NASDAQ was down 22 points at 39.07. 10-year yield today, well, that's finally broke down 2.49% at 0.03. 800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coins. First, I do need to make this announcement, Al. Beginning October 27th, which would actually affect the Monday the 28th program, the broadcast will be changing frequencies at the 4 o'clock only program, the 4 p.m. Eastern Time program, Monday through Friday only. WWCR changes its frequencies. It is heading to 6.115 megahertz. Currently, we're 6.875 this time of the year. They change it. It'll swing back in the spring, 6.115. So make sure you mark your records. And I'm sure come Monday, we'll be getting lots and lots of calls wondering where we're at. But we'll try to remember to continue the announcement until Friday. Hi, Al.
Hi, Melody. Another interesting day. U.S. dollar index was basically flat from yesterday. 79.26 is the number I'm reading on the screen right now. And it's just interesting that this is about the third day now that they've been below 80, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And 80 appeared to be the line that they would maintain. And it doesn't mean that anything dramatic has happened, but it is odd. I'm trying to remember, and I absolutely cannot remember. But was there an instance in, say, the last 6 months when the U.S. dollar index fell below 80 and didn't bounce right back up over 80 the following day?
I couldn't recall.
I can't either. It might have happened a dozen times, and I just didn't pay attention to it. But I'm looking at this, and I think this is at least the third day below the 80 mark on the U.S. dollar index. Which, again, it's nothing monumental, but it's one of those things where you look at it and say, that's interesting. Because it signals that perhaps they're not maintaining the 80 line, or perhaps they can no longer maintain the 80 line, or maybe there never was an 80 line, and it was something we merely imagined. But it's, you know, inquiring minds, Melody, they want to know.
Well, I think they've done an excellent job at holding the dollar here, but we all know all countries manipulate their currencies. They're all fiat currencies. They're all open for manipulation. The majority of all the countries that mean anything, you know, the ones that have the power and the big economies certainly are all fiat. So they all manipulate their currencies as their lower currencies, and it helps their exports. So,
theory, and that's the justification. But what it really does is by inflating their currency and making it less valuable,
mm-hmm.
what they essentially do is diminish the cost of labor in their country.
Mm-hmm.
They impose a pay cut on the people who work for a living.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep on working, and they might have been making $10 an hour, and they're still making $10 an hour, but it only buys $9 worth of product where it used to buy 10. By means of inflation, they are cutting the income of ordinary wage earners in their country. And it's an invisible reduction that very few people understand or appreciate, but it generates a profit for those who are in a multinational corporation, and they're able to generate products with cheap labor here and sell them into foreign countries.
And that's absolutely correct. And, you know, we used to talk about exporting our inflation with China, and that's exactly how it was done. We allowed them to keep their currency low, and it worked just as you described. And so, therefore, we exported our inflation. So
we did for a while.
We did for a while, yes.
But if those dollars start coming back here,
yes,
we were exporting our excess paper dollars,
mm-hmm,
essentially, to foreign countries.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're sitting on, and now they've got a pile of them, and they're beginning to wonder if those excess paper dollars are really going to be worth anything in the near future. And therefore, they're using them to buy gold or come into this country and using them to buy products. And the result is that inflation's coming back. Those dollars are coming back. The inflation that we exported is coming home to roost, although it's not obvious yet, but we can presume that it's going to contribute to increased inflation in this country. If that happens, of course, the demand for gold will rise.
Absolutely. So a lot of things on the radar, and it is interesting to follow the dollar, how everything works together. And even with their manipulation, you still see the reactions from various sectors of the market. So an interesting today, we talk about the U.S. dollar. The Saudi Arabia severs diplomatic ties with the U.S. Because we didn't do what they wanted us to do with Syria.
Well, they're threatening.
They're threatening.
Yeah, I don't know that they're going to sever it. So I know that's the headline. From Reuters. It says Saudi Arabia severs diplomatic ties with U.S. over response to conflict.
Well, they're thinking
Syria.
About it.
But I think the truth is they are considering. It's not a full break. It's honey, I am really, really mad. Man, got a little spat going on between the husband and wife here, and somebody is very much upset. And it probably means the United States is going to have to either buy Saudi Arabia some chocolates and a dozen roses, or maybe 20 new F-16s. It's hard to say. What do you think? What do you suppose will calm the lovers' spat with Saudi Arabia? Roses and chocolate, or F-16s?
Well, it also makes me wonder what their real problem is. I mean, supposedly we're exporting so much more oil than we ever have for a very long time. So is that, are we diluting their markets? Are we, have we gone into competition with Saudi Arabia?
And, well, we no longer need them the way we did in the past.
This is
and
true.
Therefore we can afford to, we can afford to treat them a little more callously than we have in the past. And Saudi Arabia is, they are feeling upset about that. But I don't think the problem per se is that we are competing in the oil market. I don't think that's what has Saudi Arabia. I think the problem there are Muslim nations and Muslim forces in the Middle East that would like nothing better than to see Saudi Arabia overturned. Mm-hmm. They'd like to see that government overturned. And Syria is apparently one of the governments that is less than positive about Saudi Arabia, and Iran may be another one. And in this article, it says they're upset. Saudis are upset at President Obama's policies on Iran and Syria. And the ruling family are threatening a rift with the United States that could take the alliance between Washington and the kingdom to its lowest point in years. Saudi Arabia's intelligence chief is vowing that the kingdom will make a major shift in relations with the United States to protest perceived American inaction over Syria's civil war, as well as recent U.S. overtures in Iran. Prince Bandar al bin Sultan told European diplomats that the United States had failed to act effectively against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict was growing closer to Tehran, that would be Iran, of course, and had failed to back Saudi support for Bahrain, where it crushed an anti-government revolt in 2011. So the problem here, from my perspective at least, is the Saudis are every bit as vulnerable in the Middle East as Israel. I won't say every bit, but there's a similarity here. And many of the enemies of Israel are perhaps also enemies of Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia has a problem. It's held together by the Saud family. It's essentially an aristocracy that rules by virtue of being perceived as something royal, for lack of a better term. I don't know that they'd use that term. But basically, they rule by handing out bribes to everybody in the country. And that'll work as long as the oil is flowing. But when they run out of oil, it won't be a good time to be a Saudi. Won't be a good time to be a member of the ruling family in Saudi Arabia, because a lot of people are just jealous, angry, whatever. And they'd like to get the Saudi family. So, and the United States is no longer protecting as they had since 1971.
Well, you'd think with all the money that they have that they'd be able to protect themselves. But it brings interest to the U.S. dollar. What type of an impact will that have as the U.S. dollar being the reserve currency? One of the ways in which the Saudis could change their major shift in relations is with the U.S. dollar. They could begin selling their oil in other currencies.
Well, here's the other point. The whole reason that the dollar is
right,
the world reserve currency is, or at least a primary reason, perhaps the primary reason, is that when we went off the gold standard back in 1971, the next deal between the Nixon administration and Saudi Arabia was that we would guarantee their security.
Mm-hmm.
as long as they guaranteed to sell their crude oil only for dollars.
That's right.
And after that, OPEC followed along. And because the world had to have dollars in order to purchase crude oil on the international market, there was a demand for dollars. And this demand for dollars created the illusion of value where there really wasn't much. Now, if the deal with Saudi is breaking down, for whatever reason, if it's breaking down because the Saudis' feelings are hurt, if it's breaking down because the United States is now exporting crude oil and competing with Saudi, the point is, what effect is this going to have on the foundation for the U.S. dollar as world reserve currency? Insofar as it diminishes the need for dollars to purchase crude oil on the international market, it necessarily diminishes the value of the dollar. When that happens, in theory, price of gold goes up, value of the dollar goes down, suffers more inflation, suffers more depreciation. So there's a lot involved here, and it's not just a question of, this isn't going to be resolved with just a dozen roses and a box of chocolates, or even a 20 F-16s. Something's got to happen here in order to protect the dollar, unless they're just they're prepared to abandon the dollar. Have they just seen the writing on the wall and they said, we can't save it, so to heck with it, we're not going to bother trying. What do you think? Will they save it or let it go?
Well, what's in their best interests?
Well, I'm talking what's in whose best interest?
Their
Saudi's best interest,
yeah.
Or ours?
Well, aren't we beholden to them? We're beholden to them that they continue using the U.S. dollar to sell their oil.
But they're beholden to us to guarantee their security. At the point in time when we stop guaranteeing their security, they may be in more trouble than Israel. You know, Israel could fight for itself. I'm not sure how long, but it could fight for itself if the United States wasn't backing it up. I don't know that Saudi Arabia can do that. That country is sparsely populated. I'm not sure how much loyalty the Saudi family commands among the Saudi people. I don't even think, from what I've heard in the past, I doubt that they have an effective military. And although they have one, and they have people who fly jet airplanes and the rest, but what I'm getting to is this. There's been so much money in Saudi Arabia, and it's been pretty much shared with a lot of the people in Saudi Arabia. The Saudis, the people of Saudi Arabia, haven't generally been taking the jobs as ditch diggers. They haven't been taking the jobs as grunts in the military. They have relied on foreigners to come in and do the scut work for them while they lived large. Now, if they don't have an established military, who's going to protect them in the event that someone else attacks? If the U.S. won't, who protects the Saudis? I don't think they can rely on their own people.
No, they probably couldn't, and as a comment, it could also be U.S. policy to destabilize the Middle East.
Well, I understand. We've made the whole place, the Middle East certainly more explosive than it was.
But if they are in real danger, I mean, they might be, you know, playing cards and pulling a bluff. You know, either you do a better job with Syria and taking care of Iran, or we will dump the dollar. We will no longer. So, you know, the U.S. is really losing its power over a lot of areas in the world.
Well, whatever they're doing, you have to wonder, is the U.S. now indifferent to the fate of Saudi Arabia? Are they no longer significant to us and no longer significant to supporting the dollar? Is that where we are? We don't see that relationship anymore? Or is the U.S. State Department and the Obama administration simply inept, incompetent, and they're allowing changes to take place that are perhaps contrary to our national interests? What do you think, Melody? Indifference or incompetence?
Probably incompetence, both. But what I do know is, should any of that happen, should... You know, people, where do you want your money? And it really does come down to that.
It's another one of these signs. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I have an article that we won't get into today. And it's a speech delivered by the head of the Bank of International Settlements, recently, and he's flat out come. I've read about two-thirds of the speech. It's 9 pages. I've read 6-7 pages of it so far, and I haven't gotten through. I haven't finished it, but we'll get to it tomorrow or Friday, one of the others. And he's simply saying, look, the banks have done everything they can. And he is flat out saying it's time to go back. We've got to do something to recreate productivity in the major economies. We can't continue to go deeper and deeper into debt. He talks about debt repeatedly during the 6-7 pages of the speech that I've read so far. He's warning that it cannot be sustained, this whole thing. I mean, it is delightful on one level. Because what the head of the Bank of International Settlements is doing is essentially telling people the same thing we've been saying on this program for 5 years. And he's admitting, look, the stuff has just about hit the fan, and we can't go any further with this. In fact, part of his speech, and I can't quote it right now, I'll have it tomorrow or Friday whenever we get into it. But part of his speech, oh, we've gone past, it's time for our commercial. Part of his speech is concerned about what's happened in just the last couple of weeks. And it indicates that we may be at a very critical point. I'm Alfred Addis here in Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We've missed the time to stop talking and do commercials, and therefore we have to make up for it. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Do we have a special for folks today, Melody?
We're going to continue with the special, the $5 Liberty Gold piece with the free silver eagle, free shipping, all for $450. And they just need to give us a call. Plus, your name will be going into the basket. We'll be having that drawing next Friday for a Mint State 62 $10 Indian gold piece and a roll of silver eagles. But you got to get your orders in. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And if you have any questions for today's program, please email us at questions@dgscoins.com. Questions@dgscoins.com. And
Okay, Melody, what's next?
What's next is...
You don't know what's next, do you?
Yes, I do know what's next. I had someone send me, we have a question coming in. What is the difference between money and currency? Is the dollar being supported by oil and war from the imminent crash?
Well, the difference between money and currency is the difference between an asset and a debt. That's not, I won't say that's God's definition of the difference, but that's pretty close. Money is gold and silver. It has been money for several thousand years. It will be money for a considerable time into the future, even though there are forces around us. Oh, no, that's not money. Money is green pieces of paper that we can print for a nickel and loan to you for a dollar or $20 or $50 or $100. There are forces, and I don't blame them on one level. I guarantee you if I could print pieces of paper that cost me a nickel, and I could make them available to people for a dollar, that would be a heck of a deal. It's a 95% markup. You understand? That's a deal. But you can take another one of those pieces of paper and just add a couple of zeros to it, and instead of being worth a dollar, it's worth $100, and it still costs a nickel to make. How do you like to be in that business? How do you like to be in a business where you could make anything? I don't care what it is. Make anything. Cost you a nickel and sell it, essentially, or lend it into circulation, either one. But you can put it into circulation for a dollar, for $20, for $100, and cost you a nickel. This is more lucrative than dealing drugs. If you want to see a business where you can make some real money, get into the central banking business. Huh? Because of the incredible profits that are possible, or the paper profits that are possible, they like this currency system. They like people to have confidence in little pieces of paper that are intrinsically worthless. And those pieces of paper are currency. They are not money. And when you go out to a store and you use that currency, you don't actually buy things. You purchase things, and very few people understand the difference. When you buy, you get legal title and equitable title to a product. When you purchase, you only get equitable title. You get a right of use, but you don't actually own it, because the currency does not carry intrinsic legal title, at least not that's available to whoever is using it. The implications are huge. I'm not going to get into all of them today, but it's the difference between paper and gold. I guess if currency and money, paper and gold. All right, very simple. And hard to believe, hard to understand. People look at it and say, yeah, but I can use this $100 bill to go buy things. No, you can't. You can use it to go purchase things. You can't use it to pay your debt, but you can use it to discharge your debt. And it has created, by embracing this paper currency, it's created a fundamental lie, a fundamental fallacy on which our economy is built, on which our taxing system is built, on which our wealth is largely built. And it's all built on a lie. And the lie is that these little pieces of paper have any sort of intrinsic value. And they have virtually none. So what else we got, Melody?
Robert sent us an email. He says, Al, you are correct. It is the Sunni versus Shiite struggle.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. has been doing the bidding of the Saudis in the Middle East, and also wasn't something like 17 of the 19 Muslims involved in 9/11 from Saudi Arabia.
That was the allegation. It remains mm-hmm. to be seen who was really involved. I mean, I don't think we've got a straight explanation of what's happened on 9/11 to this day, at least not from the government. Did the Muslims do it? I don't believe it myself, but who knows? You know, we'll find out one day, maybe, but not today, perhaps. What else, Melody?
And something that's become a little irritant to me, Boehner came out today and he says more people will lose insurance under Obamacare than sign up in the exchanges. And there was an article where health plans they're sending hundreds of thousands of cancellation letters to people like myself who buy our own insurance coverage. And Florida Blue, for example, is terminating about 300,000 policies.
Mm-hmm.
That's 80%
yeah.
of its individual policies in the state. Kaiser Permanente in California has sent notices to 160,000 people, about half of its individual businesses in the state.
Half so far.
Insurer,
tell them what they're going to send tomorrow and next week and so on, but go ahead.
Insurer Highmark in Pittsburgh is dropping about 20%. Blue Cross, Independence Blue Cross, the major insurer in Philadelphia, is dropping about 45%. There's an estimated 14 million people who purchase their own insurance. I mean, that's you're talking about some of these companies, 80%, 50%. It's amazing.
It's not just amazing. It's a kind of fraud because...
It is fraud.
Now, we drafted some questions to send to your insurance provider. And did you get those off?
Yes, I did. I received notification today, as a matter of fact, that they signed for it on the 18th of October. So that was last Friday.
Okay. All right. It'll be interesting to see how they respond to those questions, if at all. But the point is this. Again, I've got a copy of the paperwork that they sent to Melody, the notice they sent to Melody. Have a paper copy right here. And it says in part... let's see where it is. This notice is to inform you that your current certificate with the, I won't name the insurance company right now, but with the insurance company, is not fully compliant with the new health care reform laws. Well, they don't say how it's not compliant, point one, and they don't identify what new health care reform laws they're talking about. Now, everyone's going to presume that they're talking about Obamacare, and the fact that they don't specify which laws they're talking about opens the door. As soon as I see that, I'm just saying these guys are winging it. They're faking it. They're using this as an excuse. Mm-hmm. They want to terminate the policy. Now, that's a strange situation because if you terminate that policy, they are going to lose money. Whatever money you've been sending them, they're not going to get that anymore. Now, why would any business terminate regular customers? And the answer has to be because they think that in the aftermath of Obama, people are going to sign up for insurance policies that will be more lucrative to these insurance companies than what they're making right now. You've got a policy right now, and let's say they make 5%, 10%. Let's say they make 10% off your policy per year. I'm only guessing, I'm just pulling the number out of the air, but after Obamacare comes in, they know that you're going to be coming back. You might not go to them, but you're going to go to somebody. And these insurance companies are presumably going to make more money under Obamacare than they are under the existing insurance premiums. And it's the only way that this makes sense to me. Why would a business terminate its policies? It doesn't make sense unless they expect to do better in the aftermath under Obamacare. And all by itself, that raises some very interesting questions. If the insurance companies can make more under Obamacare than they can make right now, how much isn't that necessarily going to diminish the amount of medical care that's available to people?
Well, listen to this. This spokeswoman, Kristen Ash from Highmark, the Blue Cross, she says some policyholders who may have faced limited coverage for their medical conditions will get new plans with richer benefits, and in most cases will be at a lower rate. How do you get richer benefits at a lower rate? It doesn't happen in the real world.
Well, she's right. The whole thing is an illusion.
It is.
I mean, there's something just bizarre going on here. I saw a report where they are threatening to penalize hospitals that provide emergency medical care for poor people who can't afford anything. They just provide it, right? And the government is threatening to penalize these hospitals because you got to get, we're talking about people that are homeless, for example. They give them free medical care. The government doesn't want them to have free medical care. They want these people one way or another to sign up for Obamacare. Now, it's not money out of the government's pocket. It's not money out of the taxpayer's pocket if the hospitals provide free medical care for the impoverished. What is the government's reason for complaining about that? And the answer may be that there is an ulterior motive for Obamacare. They want everyone to sign up for Obamacare because one way or another, it's going to diminish our standing, our capacity to claim certain rights, to make certain arguments in court. It may be that it diminishes us in ways that are contrary to our interest, and they want everybody in on it, with the possible exception of Congress and their staff.
We do have a we can
take the caller right now. I didn't know if we were going to go on with this until the break or not. We've got about 3.5 minutes. Jay is calling from Washington State. Jay, are you there?
I am. I know your time is short, so I'll just quickly ask.
No, our time is a little bit longer. Your time is short right now, Jay, but go ahead.
Yeah, my question is about, collecting, if you will, American Silver Eagles, like as a long-term investment. I've been buying them lately. Not from you, I'll rectify that. But that's my question. Because I've had others tell me that, they're not good investments and that you're wasting your money. And I'm probably paying too much for them. I get them for like $27 or $26 off of eBay, I know. And I'm collecting them, for long term, to have for the collapse. So my question again is, are they good investments in that way? And I'll take your answers off the air. I appreciate all that you do, and you guys have a wonderful day.
You too, Jay.
Melody,
you want to answer that, or you want me to truck a shot?
Now, first, I would like to know the person who is telling them that silver is not a good investment. What is their agenda? And most likely, they have an agenda. They either want to put you in some sort of a paper investment, or they want to put you, they'll sell you silver, but in what type of form? I believe every coin, whether gold or silver, has a purpose and a place in a portfolio. Of the silver products, I think Silver Eagles are great. You're buying them on eBay, yeah, you're probably paying too much for them. But you know that, you get that, you understand that. That's your choice. If people are buying small amounts of silver and they choose to do eBay or go into your local dealers, just make sure they're good quality coins. You don't want them where they're all beat up and marked and scratched and damaged or anything like that. You don't want to pay a premium price for, a damaged coin. You can get a nice, fine quality product for a reasonable price. And, give us a call, Jay. I mean, we can certainly sell you what you're buying on eBay at probably a lot lower price, although you do have shipping and so forth. I think silver's a great investment. I know Al is going to go to the direction of the definition of an investment. But I think if you're sticking with silver, I look to gold and silver, 80% gold, 20% silver. I think you buy silver as like a more of a checking account. Silver Eagles, Morgan Silver Dollars, 90% silver. These are all great products to buy. I stay away from commemorative silver. I stay away from a lot of these novelty silver products. I believe coinage is better than that type of a product. I think silver bars and rounds are good for those who are looking to buy a large volume. You get to save a few dollars, a few cents on your product, and they're a little bit easier to, again, if you're purchasing a large volume. So just stick with recognizable and acceptability on your product.
I look at silver, and the only thing I'd say, you're going to do well on silver, although silver to me is always more volatile.
Absolutely.
Right? It goes up, it goes down. It goes up, it goes down. All right? You got to be at the right time and sell. Long term, you're going to do fine on silver. But along the way, you're going to see up and down and up and down, and sometimes it'll look like a skyrocket, and sometimes it'll look like a waterfall. You'll do well, but you're going to have to be a little bit more careful, a little more patient than perhaps with gold. We're going to take a break because we are, once again, 20 seconds, 22 seconds, 23 seconds, 25 seconds late. We're going to take a break. Be right back in just a moment. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cederson, Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's it for, Melody?
Excuse me?
What's it for?
What's it for?
For all your gold and silver coin needs.
I have a question.
Huh?
This is in from Phil. There are numerous accusations that the Federal Reserve and Wall Street banks are attempting to manipulate the gold downward in price.
True.
Could it be that the central banks of Russia and China are also manipulating the price of gold in order to enable them to purchase larger quantities of gold at lower prices?
I don't doubt if there's a way for that to factor in. I don't doubt it factors in. I mean, if I could reduce the price of gold so I could get to, if I could reduce the price of gold to a buck an ounce, knowing that I could buy it, I'd be in favor of that. You know, It's just normal human greed, ambition, whatever. We all want to get the product at the lowest possible price in anticipation of the day when we sell it at the highest possible price. So that's just human nature. So, but are they actually able to artificially manipulate the price of gold? I don't know, because most of it seems to happen on English and American markets, commodity markets. That's where most of the manipulation seems to take place. I don't know that that's true, but at least over the last decade or 15 years, that's been true. It might not be so true today as it was previously. Are they in a position to manipulate the price of gold? I don't know, but they are certainly glad to take advantage of it.
Well,
they're looking at it and they're saying, these people are crazy. They're giving their gold away for nothing. All right? Just like me. I guarantee if somebody's selling gold for $1 an ounce, count me in. All right? Let me get a pickup truck. Let me get a dump truck. I'm buying all the gold I can lay hands on.
Well, you know, it's the question is interesting because you just had China buying out J.P. Morgan's big office building in New York, and we all know that J.P. Morgan is one of the, you know, the major central banks in keeping the price of gold down. So who knows? Maybe China and J.P. Morgan has a nice little relationship going, and you never know. I know a farmer who told me it's been a couple years, but China helped manipulate the price of soy down, and they were able to come in and buy it at a much lower price. So they do take advantages of prices being lower. And Al, you're right. You have the price of gold that is still priced out of London. And so you do see the prices. Yeah. And the early morning price comes out of London. It's the beginning of the set pricing of gold. So but this year you've had very little gold sold by central banks. Very little gold.
So far as we know, but where is it coming from? Because if I understand correctly, in the last 12 months, China's purchased 2,000 tons of gold. Am I mistaken about that? Do I have my number completely wrong on that?
They purchased a lot of gold. I don't have the number right in front of me.
I believe that's correct because we've looked at it previously, and it worked out to about a quarter of what the government claims to have stashed away at Fort Knox and wherever. We allegedly have 8,200 tons of gold, or the government or the United States allegedly has 8,200 tons. China has, if I'm remembering correctly, and I probably might be 2,000 tons in just 1 year. You do that a couple of years, and you're going to have as much or more gold as the United States has, and it's not inconceivable. Some people suspect that China's supply of gold may already exceed that of the United States. What's the point in all of this? They are trying to get rid of their paper and buy something tangible. And they're doing the same thing, buying, getting rid of paper and buying something tangible when they buy a property in New York City. It's not so much a question of how much money will we make on this property in New York City. It may be that they paid $600 million for the property in New York City and the property's value falls to $500 million. What did we say? $60 million? Falls to $50 million. Right? It falls by, who knows, 10%, 20% might happen, but they're still going to have most of their principal intact. Same thing is true with gold. Hard to know what's absolutely going to happen, but we're still, those who have gold are still going to have the majority of your principal intact. Those of you who have paper, in a worst-case scenario, are going to see your principal disappear, vaporize, vanish, and be gone forever. Huh? You know, a lot of people are, we see that interest rates are rising a little bit right now. And people are therefore saying, oh, I'm not going to take gold because gold, it just sits there. It doesn't generate any interest. All right, go ahead and chase those interest rates and chase that profit if you think that's a real profit that's worth chasing. Go ahead and chase it. But when you do, you place your assets, you place your principal at risk. You're chasing those interest rates by means of paper debt instruments. And they are far more risky than holding your wealth in the form of gold. Yeah, true, you're not going to make interest off the gold. But your principal will still be there, all right? Your principal will be there 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 100 years from now. You're going to have a principal locked up in however much gold, assuming you could, you know, if you could live to be another 100 years old, your principal is still there. That won't be true. No one even imagines it will be true about the stocks, the bonds, whatever other paper debt instruments, pension funds, bank accounts. Everyone understands that sooner or later they're going to be badly depreciated. That won't happen with gold. Gold will protect your principal. So make a choice. Decide whether you think we are in jeopardy, we are unstable. If you do, get the gold. If you believe the economy is strong and getting stronger, take the paper, at least for a little while. But for myself, I just can't see legitimate reason to believe the economy is getting stronger. And if that's correct, then go gold.
There's another question, and which is the best form of 90% silver to purchase, quarters, dimes, or 50-cent pieces? And I don't think it really matters which. I think you just need to accumulate. I have people saying they want dimes. If the price gets too high, it'll be easier to make smaller purchases. But then on the other hand, all things are relative. And I think if we begin using gold, silver, I think inflation will be much higher. So therefore, you know, you might be using two dimes or three dimes or five dimes. I don't worry about things like that. I worry about accumulating gold and silver. 90% silver is great for that type of situation, but you're also buying it for the silver content. And before we had the big shortage of 90% silver, which started up this spring, silver was one of the best ways you could buy silver. It was very inexpensive to the spot price. You could buy it for pennies over spot, and that has changed. So now I always weigh, if someone says which is the best to purchase, 90% or silver eagles, I look at the price cost and what people are currently holding. If you already have 90% and there's not a big difference between the 90% and silver eagles, well, then you buy silver eagles. So it's something that changes every day. And I don't think one coin is always better than another. It depends on the day. It depends on the price. It depends on the premium. It depends on what you're holding. And we take the time out to help our clients with that information. So that's a good question.
I think in the long run, there's two questions there. What is the best form of 90% junk silver? That's one question. But the other unstated question is, what is the most risky form to use to store your wealth? And from my perspective, the answer is paper, paper, and paper. And again, I'm going to argue as long as it seems true to me that if you've got paper, trade as much of it in as is reasonable. Got to have some paper. I understand that's the way the world operates. I get that. But from my perspective, trade as much paper as is available to you to trade. Trade that paper in for something tangible, gold or silver. Whether you get nickels, whether you get dimes, quarters, half dollars, not nickels, of course, or whether you get, you know, silver eagles or gold eagles or whatever it is you're getting, collectible coins, it's going to be a much better choice, in my opinion, than holding on to paper. You know? I mean, the other question is which coins, which silver coins make the best junk silver? The question is, how long do you dare hold on to your paper? I don't have an answer for you, but that's another question that needs to be considered. What else do we have, Melody?
Let's see. And 90%, and the only time I really recommend 40% is when prices of 90% get so high. When silver was trading at $50, close to $50 for spot, it's time to look around, and maybe at 40%, you get more coins, you get a little less silver for the number of coins that you hold, but yet the premium is usually a little bit lower. And that's what we look for. As premiums go higher, we keep looking for the deals. So what's next, Al?
I don't know. We've got, let's see, how about $1 million isn't what it used to be? This is an article from Casey Research, and it points out that in 2007, An investor with $1 million could earn $60,000 annually on a certificate of a deposit. So if you retired and you had $1 million and you put that into CDs, you'd have $60,000 coming in every year for you to live on without having to touch the principal. This isn't allowing for inflation and the rest. That's just if everything stayed stable, your $1 million would generate $60,000 a year in the form of CDs. Today, the same CD would earn about $12,000. The same CD is therefore collecting about, generating about 20% as much today as it did in 2007, 6 years ago. If you have $1 million and you wanted to live on $60,000 a year as your annual income, today you're going to need $5 million in order to generate that standard of living. They go on, they point out return on your portfolios. The old rule of thumb, you were looking for 6% return on your portfolio wealth. You calculated that there was perhaps an average of 2% inflation over the years while you were retired. And figure out that you had to have money to last to be 120 years old. This was the old rule of thumb. And they went on, and they say a retiree today, however, who invests 65% or more of his nest egg in treasuries or CDs will not earn enough to keep up with inflation, let alone pay the bills. Now, the point in all of this is simply that, you know, an extensive article, it goes on, and there's more to be more here, but the point is, if you're going to hang on to those paper debt instruments, this is just another one of these stories that emphasize what we talk about on this program on a regular basis. It's not going to work. The CDs, it is improbable that they are going to provide for your support in your golden years. The golden years are made of brass. That's something one of my aunts used to say years ago. If you've got the money and you think it's going to take you through the paper, in a form of paper, and you think it's going to carry you through your retirement, there's a real good chance that that's an enormous mistake. And who knows? You know, we're just looking at CDs. They're off by 80% in terms of what they generate in the last 6-7 years. The same thing can happen to pensions. It can happen to anything you care to mention, with a couple of exceptions. You know, there are tangible things. Again, talk about land, tools, guns, ammunition, food. Lots of things are going to go up, and two of the best are going to be gold and silver. There's no guarantee what's going to happen, but there are probabilities. There are things we can look at and we can say, what is more likely? What is more probable? And particularly as you approach retirement, you're not going to be able to go out. Once you retire or get into that age range, it's going to be very difficult to find another job. It's going to be very difficult. In a worst-case scenario, everybody's going to have a problem finding a job. What are you going to do if you're in your 60s and all of a sudden your paper debt instruments have lost 60-80% of their capacity to provide, you know, the money that they would otherwise, you would hope to receive out of your investments? It's been reduced by 60-80%. Are you going to be able to make it? Well, you might be able to, but you start consuming your principal. And if you run out of principal before you run out of years, you're going to have a very, you know, unpleasant situation, which all just brings us back. Look, gold and silver, gold and silver, gold and silver. All right. Not a perfect solution, but we don't live in a perfect world. It's the best solution of those that appear to be available at this time. We are out of time, Melody, so we got to move along. I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.